Good evening. Welcome back to our weekly sitting and Dharma talk after this break of a little more than a month. I appreciate very much sitting again with everyone. Having sat during this time by myself, so it's nice to sit again and practice what we call meditation. I say what we call meditation because there are so many ideas about it and so many definitions of it. Meditation. And as I like to say sometimes, that the Tibetan word for meditation, which is gom or gom, something like that, literally means to become familiar with. So it means to become familiar with our mind. So we sit here and all this stuff going on in our mind and the thoughts arising, and you find you're planning your meal for next week and remembering what you did today, and even stuff that has nothing to do with anything, just this random stuff happening in your mind. And we become familiar with this notion of my mind. We become familiar with awareness when we are more aware or less aware, even maybe what is awareness or questioning what is awareness. We become, or our intention is to become more familiar with our true nature, our essence, the essence of being. And if we become familiar with our true nature, we will become familiar with our true not self, I would say, our true non-self. Because as the Buddha always declined to say when he was asked, is there a self or is there not a self? He pointed out that the question was missing the point. Self or not self. The question was missing that whatever you want to call the self is always changing. So it's not fixed. And there's no abiding self, we would say. So we become familiar with that too, with our meditation. It's a really good definition of meditation, I feel like. Instead of, we have meditation that's about cultivating mindfulness, or we have meditation that's about, focusing on the body, sensations. We have meditation that's focused on a fixed point. There's all kinds of different meditation. The one that I feel and that I feel in Zen is what we are really pointing at and encouraging us to practice is this becoming familiar with. So familiar with that you're not separate from. Because when we're familiar with things, then we feel a different affinity for it. We see this in the world. Anything that's unfamiliar is rejected. The foreigners who arrive in our countries, they're unfamiliar. They don't speak our language. They don't look like us. They have a different culture. They dress differently. Unfamiliar means bad, often. Because we're afraid when we're not familiar with things. So this is a wonderful practice we have that is encouraging us to become familiar with everything. What's the result then? What happens when we do this? Well, this knowledge of no self, of the not self, or the true nature of self, that leads to liberation. Because then there's this ease. We no longer have to reject or grasp because it's all familiar. Even when it's not familiar, because we're familiar with the unfamiliar as well. How does that play out then in our lives? So we come back here tonight, and it's a familiar environment. We do this on Thursday nights. We're familiar with it. We're familiar with the other people, even though it's not always, it's never the same people who are on the screen. A lot of the faces are familiar, but sometimes someone's here and then someone else isn't. And however, we're familiar with how it works, the setup, all of that. And therefore, it's easy. It's not, there's no like tension around it. There might be tension because, I had a busy day. I have something else I should be doing. My neck hurts. I'm hungry. Whatever it is. But we're familiar with the basic notion of it. And then that allows us to then open to things that are less familiar. And recently I've been having this experience about cashews, the cashew nuts, where I bought like 2 days ago or 3 days ago, I bought cashews at local store. And it tells you the origin where they come from. And there were roasted cashews and unroasted cashews. And I like the roasted ones. So I bought the roast. I went to get the roasted ones. The roasted ones came from Burkina Faso. And the unroasted ones came from Togo. So both African countries. So I bought the roasted ones and I go home. And the next morning, I always eat dried nuts like that with breakfast. And the next morning, I took the container with, and as immediately, even just seeing the cashews, I felt this overwhelming connection with the people who brought me those cashews in Burkina Faso. I've never been to Burkina Faso. I think it's a place that has a lot of problems now. It didn't used to, but it has problems these days about with, jihadists and, Muslim extremists and things. But it wasn't that. It was that I just had this huge warm heart connection with the people who brought me those cashews. And it wasn't with the people in the supermarket, in the, bio supermarket. It could have been, but it was people in Burkina Faso who brought me those cashews. I had a similar thing with, I had someone on the telephone last night in the United States because I'm going to the United States in a month and I wanted to buy theater tickets to go with my family to the theater, and it wasn't working online, so I call. And I get this guy on the line, and I just felt the same connection with this guy. I have no idea who this guy is. He was helping me, very friendly. Of course, I recognize his accent. He's from Minneapolis. I know the accent really well. But there was something about it, and I said to him, at the end, he said, "Is there anything else I can do for you now?" Because of course these calls are recorded, and they, probably have stuff that they have to say. And I said, "No, but do you realize how amazing this is? Do you realize how many kilometers there are between us? And we're sitting here and we're having this conversation, and you're helping me, and all of my problems are solved just by talking to you on the telephone across all of these kilometers." And I think he was kind of, he said, "Oh yes, well, that's wonderful. That's great, I just felt this immediate connection with this guy. Of course, there was the extra familiarity of my hometown, the way he speaks, the theater I'm going to, which I know, although it's in a new place. But in any case, so there's degrees of familiarity, right? But our meditation helps us to have this basic familiarity with just the essence, just what is, which then heightens our familiarity with everything else. The other major thing that's been on my mind since last night was, of course, this horrific accident in Lisbon. And because of the nature of our Sangha and our, deep connections with one another, and my experience of traveling to Lisbon, and spending a lot of time in Lisbon over the past 20 years, I have a connection. I feel a deep familiarity and connection with that, with the people of Lisbon, with the country, with the victims, even the victims. I've read people who were just in the street and are completely traumatized by what they saw and experienced and heard, and that's a close proximity. Throughout the city, I'm sure there's other trauma happening, and then extending beyond that to the rest of us. And this deep familiarity I have changes the way I experience that incident. It's different than, kind of along the same, in the same time frame, a horrific earthquake in Afghanistan. Many more people have died there than have died in Lisbon. Of course, I have great compassion, but I don't have the same sense of familiarity as I do with Lisbon, with, this, mountain, rustic, rural mountain area in Afghanistan. Of course, the human life that's lost is the same, and the trauma is the same. And my familiarity with that, with the basic essence of being, is the same. However, the degree of familiarity in my everyday life is different. What the Afghanistan incident did was bring back 25 years to those same places when the United States was and the coalition was invading Afghanistan. And we heard all of these names, Kandahar and Jalalabad and Mazar-e Sharif and Kabul and all these names, and that all came back to me. So there's a familiarity on that level. But we can see this even in the way that the media is covering it. The accident in Lisbon is on the front page of every newspaper I'm reading, whether it's French, American, British, it's like the big headline. You have to read pretty far down the page to find the Afghanistan earthquake. Because of the proximity of the incidents, the familiarity we have with these places regionally, just physically, but can we have this basic essential familiarity with the true nature of things that allows us to experience this compassion, whether it's in my neighborhood being the street I live on, the country I live in, the city I live in, the continent I live on, the place I frequent or not, can we have that same sense of full connection, interconnection, let's say, full interconnection, because that's what the non-fixed self means, is that it's all connected, we're all connected. Can we sense that connection like I can with the cashews in Burkina Faso? Even if we don't physically go to Burkina Faso. And every time I open that cupboard and I see those cashews, it comes back to me. I feel such a huge connection with those people in Burkina Faso. A karmic link forever, It's like the story I told in the summer when I was sitting waiting for people to come to Dokusan and had this beautiful view, on the veranda overlooking the ocean. And outside the window, there was a electrical wire. And I just looked up, and on that wire, there was a bird. And the bird and I met eyes. I'm forever connected with that bird. That bird and I are karmically linked. The truth is, we're all karmically linked, but some karmic links have greater proximity. It's like in the retreat in the heart of life that we do, which I am planning to do again. Don't fret. When I say whoever you meet throughout the day is also in the retreat because you are in the retreat. That's the level of connection we can see. We are all connected, and everything, each action, we are not isolated beings who can act without consequences to the larger whole. If we do that, then we create division, mistrust, anger, suffering. We have to see that every action has a consequence, and it's unlimited, the consequences. It's like dominoes, and we don't know where it goes or what those consequences are, but we're all linked. We're all interconnected, as far as we can possibly fathom and beyond, these are the three, this touches on the three universal truths or points that the Buddha always made, which were that everything is impermanent and always changing. And so, because nothing is permanent, if we base our lives on possessing things or people or identities or positions, resisting change, that does not lead to happiness. We know that that leads to suffering. We know that. We experience that in our own lives all the time. When we don't get what we want, we see children, they throw a tantrum. And we're like that. And this means that there is no eternal, this was the third point the Buddha always made, was that there's no eternal unchanging self that's isolated and independent from all things. And these are things that we become familiar with in our meditation because we see it happen en direct, as we say, live in our sitting. If we pay attention, often we're not paying attention. It's happening anyway, but we're not paying attention. We see it's just, the thoughts come and go, the feelings come and go, the cars in the street come and go, the sound in the other room comes and goes, the feeling in our the itch on our neck or the breath in and out comes and goes, unfixed, ever changing, And then what does that mean? That then that we may feel a great sense of loss, then thinking, oh, I can't hang on to anything. It can bring up, fears of death and disappearing. I remember years and years ago, somebody told me he was not afraid of dying. But the thing that just really, really annoyed him was that after he died, everybody else would just keep on doing what they're doing, and he would no longer be part of it. This is a real fear we have. We won't be there anymore. We're going to miss everything. What we don't realize is we're already missing it. By having that thought, we're already missing what's happening here and now. And that, can we turn that, a poet, a French poet who I know recently died this week, and he said poetry is basically an answer to the fear of death or something like that. He said sometimes people say that's what it is. And he said, but can we turn that fear of death into a love of the world and make the poetry about being in love with the world? And the beauty of the world. Even, the horrible stuff. Can we love it entirely? That was what his way was, which then made it, I don't know, I didn't know, I hadn't realized that he was dying. He had cancer, I didn't know that. And he, I don't know how he, I just ordered his most recent book to see if he talks about it, how his poetry reflects the knowledge of death imminently. His book came out in April and he just died, so he knew then he was dying already. How can we turn our life into a poet, the poetry of love of life and appreciation, instead of living it from a place of fear? And clinging. Because when we're fearful, then we cling. We don't want to lose things. We're afraid of losing it, so we hang on to it. And then we are missing life. We are missing what's truly here and now. Because it's moving and changing all the time, we just never know. Those people who got on that funicular in Lisbon last night had no idea what was ahead. They had no idea. How could you possibly have known that would happen? Nobody could. And yet the circumstances of were all leading to that moment. Every moment is leading to this moment. Every moment is this moment. So let's live it fully, because we don't know, We don't know when that funicular moment might come for us. I don't mean literally on the funicular, but we don't know. And when we become more familiar with this impermanence, for this unfixed nature of things, then we truly can see the beauty of just what is. Really fully appreciate it here and now. So that's why I say I really appreciate coming here tonight and sitting here with you. I can have thoughts of, oh, maybe we should have waited a week. It's too early. People don't realize we're back, although, we've sent out a lot of messages about it, but, I'm thinking, oh, it's too bad. People don't know. Or they're not back from holiday yet, or whatever, But that doesn't change. That doesn't change the appreciation I have for being here now with just what is. The absolute love for the whole of life, whatever it brings, whether it's, pain, suffering, joy, love, beauty, whatever it is, can I become familiar with it? Becoming familiar with it changes how I experience it. I know where that pain and suffering comes from. I know where that joy is coming from. I know what it feels like. Because, war and starvation and school shootings and earthquakes and funicular accidents and things, those are the circumstances of pain and suffering. Can we open our hearts to what that feels like, and not dwell on pushing it away, wanting it to be otherwise? It doesn't mean that we like war. It doesn't mean like we like accidents and people dying. It doesn't mean we want people to be starving, children to be starving. But our response and our experience of it changes if we can truly become familiar with the basic essence of being and our true nature. So maybe I'll stop there and see what others have to say. If anyone would like to share and comment. or just say hello and whatever you want to share.
Hello, good evening, everyone. What you were saying, this experiencing the whole of life, allowing ourselves to do that, it reminded me of this thought that comes regularly. My mother, she's quite old, and one thing is, I don't know when it began, but each time I'm with her, it started coming, that thought, that who knows if this is the last time. It's always, all the time. And another thing is, my kids, my two kids, my mother, she's the grandfather or grandmother to whom they are most connected. Either because the grandfather died when they were very young, and the other two, they never really had. There's not much proximity. There never was. My father and my ex-wife's mother. So my mother is really this person who, she's been present throughout all their lives. She's and and there's this some time ago I used to think how I started thinking how painful it will be for them when she goes, when she dies. And there was this that there's this idea that if it would be better, if you are if that proximity, that familiarity, that connection didn't exist, so that they wouldn't suffer as much. So there is the, of course, but of course, what she says is absolutely true, and I was able to see that as well by myself. I'm just describing the whole thing, the whole process. That's life. That's what it is, experiencing the whole of life. When when she will die, when she dies, they will suffer, I guess, they will suffer, and not in a small way. And she had a surgery last week to cataracts. I don't know how you call that. And she just told me today that one of my kids, because he went, he offered to go. I was really, it was really touching. Nobody said anything. He told her, they arranged it, the two of them. He went with her to the hospital and waited for her. And she made a note of, because there was this this pill that she was supposed to take for a couple of days. And there was this day when she was supposed to stop, and she told me today that he made a like something on his phone or something with the day, and on that day he called her so she wouldn't forget. This is the last day you're supposed to take this one. That was really touching. I was so touched by that. I had no idea. I knew nothing of this. Which is fine. It is fine. I'm almost happy that I didn't know anything, and that there's this I don't know, good-heartedness, this goodwill. I don't know what's the word. Just on his own, on their own, people do this. And, so yeah, there's like it's doesn't make any sense, and how much better it would be if they were if he was not if they were not connected to my mother in such a deep way, in order they wouldn't suffer when she dies. This just it's not like that. Well, I don't know if it's not like that, but just go towards what you're saying. So yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, thank you. And we, the Alfred Lord Tennyson line, better to have loved than lost than never to have loved at all. Because we can do that. We can like not want to become close to people because we don't want to lose them. So then we miss the whole relationship, We can live our lives doing that, which is tragic,
Nice to see everybody. This reminds me of something that came up, and it's funny, it gives me kind of a, not kind of, a very uncomfortable feeling. There is a guy, I don't think any of you all have met him, knows all, no, I don't know Amy, I think not, whose name is Vincent. He's Irish, and he's been to Joe's a couple of times when I've been there for these mini weekend retreats.
I met him.
You met
I met
him.
him too. He was in the Healthy Boundaries course that I teach.
But not the time that Krisha was there. No, I don't think so. Okay, so you all know who I'm talking about. And he is avowedly, I'm not letting out a secret, an ex-alcoholic who does meditation with AA or alcoholics in any case, somewhere in Asia. I never can figure out where he is. He's told us his story, but it's very complicated. And very rarely personal. So the last time, now that I've seen him a couple of times, going, can we let's get more personal? And I asked him, he has grandchildren because he has children. I can't remember if he has a daughter or where these grandchildren come from. He said, I feel very sorry for them. I said, why? They're little, I gathered, like six, eight, something like that. Because life is so hard and they're going to suffer. I don't know why, but it just seems so sinister. I don't have grandchildren, but wow, that's the first thing you feel about your grandchildren is sorry for them that they're alive. And yet he doesn't seem to be like a super depressed person. But it was kind of floored me. I never felt sorry. Well, that's not quite true. I do kind of feel sorry for little kids that I see now when I think of what the planet is going to be like. But I mean, in a general sort of way. But it just seems so strange. I mean, and I'm totally Lord Tennyson. I mean, it's Greg Brown is this country blues singer. It's a messed up world, but I love it anyway. And that's sort of the way I feel about. Okay, so it's awful and it's hard and everything else, but you don't feel sorry for people because they're going to be alive. I mean, it just seems so horrible to me. Or maybe I didn't get it.
Sorry, but I just want to. I don't think he meant it in that way, to really just about the all the hard stuff that you can and you will encounter in your life that he's sorry about that, you know, that they will have to go through certain things that are hard.
Maybe I heard him wrong.
And he's not here, so he can't tell us. But I get what you mean.
Mean, as in, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. It's better to have lived and died than never to have lived at all to me. But I mean, you're right. Maybe I misunderstood. He's kind of solemn. He's not a jolly character, but maybe he's not bad depressed.
Hi everyone. Good to see you all. I'm a cashew addict. So just so that you know, I came home and I had stopped at the bio store and organic store and bought some cashews. So it's my soft point, but I never had that experience, that connection of that karmic connection with my cashews and the people who've picked them. But it's but I see what you mean. I had this strong connection this morning with when I heard about what happened in Lisbon. I haven't seen any pictures. Didn't really want to, but yeah, feeling this yeah, this interconnectedness is not just towards, as you were saying, what we know, but everything. So that's that. And nothing much else to say. I'm just happy to be here tonight.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Yeah, when it's with all living and non-living that we have connection, you know, so the rocks and trees and water and plants and stars, the glass, the pen, the desk, the computer, you know, we're all connected. It's all connected, interconnected. And the circumstances may change, right? Like we say, okay, so the children who are being born today, my grandson, who's 18 months old, yeah, I have no idea what the world will be like when he's my age. People say there won't be a world even. We don't know. We have no idea. And when I was born, I don't know if my grandparents were projecting what the world would be like. You know, I was born not, you know, it's hard to believe, but not so long after the Second World War, and you know, the rise of the Cold War. So there was a lot of anxiety around that, and maybe my grandparents thought that there would be no world when I was their age, that we would all be destroyed by atomic bombs. I don't know. But whatever it is, as Suzuki, Shunryo Suzuki said, you know, even if the sun were to rise from the west, so the sun rises in the east, right? But even if it were to arise from the west, the bodhisattva has only one way. Doesn't matter where the sun rises. Doesn't matter if the sun rises. It's only one way. Krisha.
Good evening, everyone. Nice to see you in the rentrée. I was missing you. I feel a bit. Like I was in vacation of Dharma Talks, and now I don't know how to participate. Like I don't have anything to say, and I don't, and I'm not feeling so much the Dharma then arising. Thank you, Amy Roshi, for your talk. I did connect to the image of we clinging when we have fear, and how that and resisting to change, and for me, how that can help to prolong suffer. A lot, and I know it, but I still do the same. Because I don't know, the fear, the fear of the fear, it's too, it feels too big. It's funny. It's really true. And Elevador da Glória, that we have a song. Elevador da Glória. It's a really hit for my time and João time. And I was in Conservatório de Ballet, so by 5 years I pick up the Elevador da Glória. And hearing Amy, it felt like if we are in the news, this is yesterday at 6. I didn't know we were international news, at least European international news. And it feels like there's a little bit of a kind of a homage of paying respect to our. To the countries that are close and to us, and in this case it's us, Portugal, it's the Elevador da Glória, and it feels moving, and it's nice. It's a catastrophe, but it's nice. It feels like you care. I'm. It's almost like I felt some happiness knowing that. Not happy of happy, but good for the this kind also of sharing. And basically, this is what I wanted to say a bit. Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you. That's very important. Because some people, if they heard you say that you were happy about the catastrophe, they would misunderstand, But we know exactly what you're talking about. That, it's suddenly there's this shared, it's one of the paramitas, shared joy, shared pain. There's something very heartwarming about that. And I'm curious, so the two of you in Lisbon, did you notice people behaving differently today with each other, or Any outright signs of something happened last night?
Me, not really. But I've been in a house most of the time. With friends, a bit, but not really. And in the news, you were talking about this shared, the importance of the shared hurt, pain, but in the news, and I don't see them that much. I saw the social media, and people tend to comment in a very aggressive and completely crazy way. I don't understand those kind of. They go, it's like it's tourism, and why did you interview the immigrant? I think the guys worked there. They were like Indians or wherever, and they paid immediate help. And they were interviewed, and then, well, that was more the Facebook and the social comments. But in between my friends, which I was working almost. The ones I talked, it's the sense is because Salvador the glory. It's a bit symbolic. Also big, and but it's a main lift in the center of Lisbon that everybody used to go to Bairro Alto, where we went out all the 80s and the 90s, where there was where was the night disco and bars and there was even a song. And I think for my generation it's more the shared feeling, but at the society, I didn't notice, I confess. But you remember that when you were saying that about me talking about happiness, it's more about my English. But that Buddha story, when someone, I don't remember, the son had died, and the Buddha told her to go and see. And in there she find her being held, yeah, by and connected. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thinking about this shared pain and interconnectedness, because among the dead, there's people from very different countries, Italians, Japanese, Portuguese, even. I think three people, I think this is what I read, three Portuguese people who actually they worked uptown. In I don't know how to call it, this Casa de Misericórdia, which is like a kind of a social institution that works does social work. So there was also and what Krisha was mentioning, yes, I think they are Bangladeshi. This is what I read. Two guys who work nearby in a tourist, with souvenirs for tourists. Because I think there's this kid, this small kid who was hurt. I think it's because sometimes information is not, it's too soon. Information sometimes it's not clear. Then it gets corrected later on. Apparently the boy is an orphan, or at least I think his father died in the crash. And these Bangladeshi guys, young guys, they helped him. I think there's some images going around. I didn't see them, with one of the guys holding the small boy. So you have all this, even in that way, you have all this people from different places, and the families and the friends of those people. So there's also that interconnectedness also in that way. Because nowadays, as we know, people move everywhere. Everyone moves everywhere. Or many people move everywhere. So,
Yep.
Happy to see you too. And I'm glad you began this week because my choir didn't start yet, and so I can be with you. And thank you for the stories. I would be curious to know what the guy from the theater told or thought by himself. Because he could surely feel, your gratefulness and the energy but to that point of, how he solved all these problems and how amazing that is. Probably he's oh wow. I don't think he had that kind of awareness. But you never know. That's funny. And maybe it changed the way he thinks about what he's doing. You never know, too. I'm remembering, that was a story that truly marked me. Do you say that? Ça m'a marqué. In Corinne's book. Did you read it? Does it exist? No, it exists only in German. Yeah. There's a story in there where she talks about, I think she was a secretary in a school or something, or in the university, or and someone and that it was a very kind person and very open to all the problems of the students or the pupil, and everybody could come and share, and she would be there to help, and etc. And I guess somehow she knew this woman personally, or from as a friend or so, and or maybe she heard later about it, at least that she was always thinking of not being in the right place and not having a job that makes enough sense without being able to see all the good she did for these students, something like that, and that made me think of our secretary in my school, who was also somebody really kind, and I thought, yeah, it really makes a difference what kind of person is sitting there in this very, it was the first room when you enter the school, and I didn't need her often, but I can still remember that it was nice that she was so welcoming and so friendly to everybody, that you could come with whatever, and you knew she would be all ears, and don't know why that came up, but probably for the guy, maybe something like that can, yeah, just that everything has its sense and everything has meaning, and even a job in a phone center where you just fix something for someone can make a huge difference. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not a lot of people are probably aware of what difference that makes. I had trouble in summer with my with some official tech stuff. I didn't have access anymore, and online it wasn't working, and so I had to call, and then they connected me to someone else, etc., etc. And at some moment, there was someone who was immediately almost choking with me, and there was a connection, and oh yeah, she said, oh, so you can't access, oh no, that's too complicated. So that gives me, I want to hang up immediately. I will hang up immediately. So, oh no, please don't. I need help. And we were joking, and then she found me the person who then was able to help me out, and that makes all the difference. It could have been a huge, I mean, it was trouble, but there was a solution, and thanks to this woman, I got the solution, and things worked out fine. So, yeah.
And those kinds of experiences, they restore our faith because there are good people.
Yes.
In fact, everyone has the basic goodness, but it gets buried. And sometimes how we respond to people then helps them to bring out that basic goodness.
Yeah, and it's and I thought, oh, it can be, even if there is a problem, and it's annoying for me, and still you can have a good time with the person, and she knows it's not her fault, and it wasn't even her. It has to do with the names, and so my name wasn't in her register, let's say. And yet she was willing to listen and just try, and then things worked out, and yeah, it could be so easy in so many situations. And how complicated can it get? I mean, boah.
That's why we say, that actually resisting and clinging is much harder than letting go. Letting go is really easy. And then life is smooth, but we think it's the opposite.
No, it's 8:29, and Amy Roshi just dropped a
Well, then I think we will end on that note then.
Okay, yeah, I think that's wise.
Thank you.